Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the Odyssey app. So the top story, not in Kansas City, but right now it is in sports. Julian Edelman, he has decided to call it quits. Julian Edelman no longer playing football. He decided today that I'm done. I am retiring. He has certainly had a great career. The internet is all in a tizzy about whether or not Julian Edelman is a Hall of Famer or not. I'm always really big, especially when we have these conversations about is a guy in the Hall of Fame or not, where you kind of got to look at like who's the most recent guys that got in at his position, because that's sort of what the new bar is. I mean, lately, it has been pretty tough to get into the Hall of Fame as a wide receiver. Isaac Bruce, Terrell Owens, Tim Brown, Marvin Harrison, Randy Moss. Those are the last five wide receivers to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. As great as Julian Edelman was in the postseason, not even close to where those guys were as players.
Yeah, and Julian Edelman played, what, 13 years, something like that. Tyreek Hill, to put in some context, has played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 full seasons. Tyreek Hill has 47 touchdowns, and Julian Edelman had 36 in his entire career. Like, the only argument for him being in the Hall of Fame is either you're super high on some good OG Kush, or they don't win the Super Bowls without Julian Edelman, which might be true. I still don't think that's enough to get you into the Hall of Fame, though.
I mean, I think the argument, and I'm not saying I would make it for Edelman, but I do think it's a pretty interesting case study.
1,000% postseason, because regular season, he was a very average wide receiver.
I also think this is the argument, well, like, if the Chiefs have a dynasty, which is still a possibility. I know it's took a little bit of a detour, but it's still a possibility. People will argue for foundations of their dynasty to be in the Hall of Fame. Julian Edelman, the second half dynasty, so not the first half, not the Welker, Moss, the Richard Seymour, yeah, the Lawyer Malloy, the early one.
Mike Vrabel.
The last 8 years of dominance from the New England Patriots, their second best offensive skill position player has been Julian Edelman. Number one is Gronk. Everybody identifies that Gronk is going into the Hall of Fame. He's one of the five greatest tight ends of all time. He is going to be a Hall of Famer. Their best wide receiver during that time was Julian Edelman. So I think that's really kind of the argument. It is the what you did in the postseason, why people argue with. The other thing will be is you were one of the pillars for a dynasty. The same way that the Chiefs have five or six pillars that we were having conversations. Well, if they go to this, what about Chris Jones going to the Hall of Fame? Chris Jones' biggest argument will be, I was on the Kansas City Chiefs. Julian Edelman's biggest argument, if he gets in, is I was a member of the New England Patriots. I was a key member. I was one of the five most important players on one of the greatest teams in the history of the league. There's certainly better individual players than he is. Hell, the best Julian Edelman would be the 19th best receiver in today's NFL, and that might be a little bit too generous, but that would be the Julian Edelman why I should get in case.
Yeah, then we're getting soft. If you're just, oh, well, you're the second best wide receiver on one of the best dynasties of all time, so you automatically get in. What about your numbers, bro? You know how many times Julian Edelman had over 1,200 yards receiving? Wait for it. Zero. Like, when you talk about 1,200 yards, that's kind of become the barometer for a great wide receiver. You talk about guys of our generation, the Julio Jones, the A.J. Greens, guys like that. They've done it 5, 6, 7 times. He did it 0 times, and his career high in touchdowns for a season is 7. He's got 36 in his entire career, man. What are we doing here? Julian Edelman is a really good player, and he deserves to be in the Patriots Ring of Honor as soon as tomorrow. But there's no way he ends up in the Hall of Fame.
Rob, I want you in on this. There's one spot left in the Hall of Fame, and they're going to close it, and it's between Julian Edelman and Jamal Charles. Who would you give the spot to?
No one gets the spot. They both don't go in the Hall of Fame. Neither one of them is deserving of the Hall of Fame.
Somebody's got to get it. Who would you give it to?
You know who I'm giving it to.
I mean, Julian Edelman. I don't think it's that close between the two.
I don't need... Based on what? Like, It's Jamal Charles 1,000 times out of 1,000. Jamal Charles has the highest yards per carry in the history of the NFL. Like, you want to talk about a stat that matters. When they hand you the ball on average, how good do you do? If your answer is better than anybody else ever has with an average offensive line, that's a better argument than I played with Tom Brady and I was really good in the postseason. I mean, Jamal's numbers are crazy.
I know. I 100% agree. Let's say you got to make the argument for Jamal Charles getting in. You certainly would make the yards per carry. He was Super Bowl MVP. I think that's greater than anything Jamal's done. And Jamal's by far and away a better player than Julian Edelman.
If Jamal played with Tom Brady, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. And if Julian Edelman played with the quarterbacks that Jamal played with, there's no way in hell we're having this conversation. I mean, Julian Edelman is a complete and total byproduct of Tom Brady. He's played his entire career in New England, which means that he had that guy throwing the ball the entire time. If he played for 29 other teams, this would be a moot point.
I mean, we could make that argument for a lot of people. I mean, Tyron Matthew's going to get in largely because he joined the team that Patrick Mahomes is on.
Well, I'm not saying Tyron Matthews. Because Jamal played in Kansas City. I mean, look at who Jamal played with. Like, his timing was not great when you talk about quarterbacks that he played with. If he came 5-6 years later to play with Patrick Mahomes, if he came 5-6 years earlier, he got a chance to play behind Willie Roaf and Will Shields and John Tate and Brian Waters and Casey Wigman.
I'm not arguing what you're saying. I certainly think that's a case for Jamal Charles. I'm just saying it's like we can't really argue what he could have done in his career. Julian Edelman won Super Bowl MVP, and as a skill in an award that they basically only give to quarterbacks, the fact that he did that, I think you could say he has the greatest catch in Super Bowl history. I think that would be my case for Julian Edelman to get in. I would say no.
Who's a better football player?
Jamal Charles.
I think Jamal Charles was by far a better NFL player, and it's not even close.
I think Edelman had a much better career than Jamal Charles.
I don't think so. I don't think anybody ever argued. If you talk about rings and championships and playoff, yes.
I think he did more in his NFL career than Jamal Charles did.
I think you could argue, yes, that he accomplished more because of the team that he played with in the franchise. But if you want to talk about who was better, and by and large, that's really what the Hall of Fame is. It's an individual-based thing. They don't...
Kind of.
I mean, they don't put the entire team in. They put the player in.
I mean, but we certainly know there's a lot of Cowboys back in the day. There's a lot of San Francisco 49ers.
Which is the only reason why we're having this conversation, because Julian Edelman's a Patriot.
There's a lot of Pittsburgh Steelers that are in the Hall of Fame right now that are only in the... Michael Strahan... Is Michael Strahan Michael Strahan if he plays in Jacksonville? I don't think he's the same guy. I think we view Michael Strahan very differently if he played for the Tennessee Titans. So, like, a lot of it is your circumstance. A lot of it is where you get drafted. A lot of it is where you produce and do those things.
Julian Edelman would be the worst player in the Hall of Fame by far. If they let him in, then if I was one of the players that's actually in the Hall of Fame, I would boycott. I would give back my bust. If you're going to put that guy in, he was an average NFL wide receiver at best during the regular season. For an 11-year stretch, I'm looking at the numbers right in front of me. He never had a double-digit touchdown season. In fact, he never had an 8-touchdown season. His average year, he had 5 touchdown catches. You don't talk about guys like that going to the Hall of Fame. Another guy that averaged about 5 touchdown catches per year, Sammy Watkins. Are we going to talk about him in the Hall of Fame too?
Do you think Mecole Hardman has a better career than Julian Edelman? Not even counting postseason. Do you think that Mecole Hardman has a better career than Julian Edelman?
Probably not. No.
I mean, I would say at this point, I would run for Mecole Hardman to be Julian Edelman. I would take him to be Julian Edelman in a heartbeat.
Do we think that Mecole Hardman has a chance of being in the league for another 9 years based on the way the first two have gone?
I do, actually.
I don't know.
I do, actually.
For one franchise, he's going to be here
though. No, not for one franchise. I do, actually, though.
That is pretty impressive, though. I mean,
think he has a pretty unique skill set.
We'll see. I hope you're right. I bet you're wrong. It is pretty impressive, though, that Edelman did play his entire career for the New England Patriots.
He's been a really good player for the Patriots.
He's been okay. You're building it up a little bit more than it is.
He's been okay. Deion Branch. He's Deion Branch.
Okay, Deion Branch
exact
is
same thing. I'm saying that. Yeah. Deion Branch and Julian Edelman's careers are very, very similar.
Yeah, nobody the day that Deion Branch announced his retirement got on the radio and said that guy should be in the Hall of Fame.
I think Edelman was better than Branch.
Nah, he's same guy.
I get the point you're making on Branch.
Super Bowl MVP. Won a couple rings.
Played with Tom Brady, got the ring. Same guy.
I get
same
your point
numbers.
On Branch, though. I think Edelman was better than him, but I get what you're saying. Let's get to the top stories of the day.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
Deion Branch is first team never return my calls, by the way. Well, yesterday, the Kansas City Royals.
You want to know who's on the list for me? Brian Westbrook is on that list for me. Brian Westbrook.
Frank Mason.
Have I ever told you guys the story? So this was a while ago. I don't think I've ever told this story, but I don't really care. So this was when the Chiefs were hiring Andy Reid. We were trying to get people on the show. And I remember I called Brian Westbrook. He actually, the only time he ever answered, We called. He answered the phone. He was like, yeah, come on. It's $500. For what? We got to pay you to come on our radio show and talk for 10 minutes about a guy you like? No, thanks. I've tried to get him through Nick because he works at Fox Sports 1, and he's not coming on our show.
$500
That's what
hit,
he said.
Bro?
He said it was $500
to come fly on here and do an in-studio hit with us and then take us out to dinner and put us up at the Westin?
He obviously didn't know who we were. He obviously didn't know who I was. That's what I should have told him.
Who in the hell? You don't know the vibe. Carrington Harrison.
You don't know the vibe.
There's some opposite guys like that, though. Like, I'm sure you got some guys in your Rolodex that you could just literally call right now and they'll come on the next segment. That's how I got Kenny Mayne that one time. Remember? You were like, hey, mm-hmm. Nick can't come on. I go, I'll call Kenny Mayne. 5 minutes later, we're talking to Kenny Mayne.
Warren Moon's first team all return my calls. He's
Ron
always ready to roll.
There's certain guys that they'll pick up.
Jaws never returns my calls.
No,
none
Jaws?
Times.
Yeah, that's my guy, Jaws.
I can't believe Brian Westbrook tried to charge me that.
$500?
He was tripping.
If he said 50, I'd continue the conversation. I mean, I wouldn't pay him, but I'd keep going. 500?
Can I ask you guys Can I ask you guys an honest question? Do people really think that Damian Williams should have won Super Bowl MVP over Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah, I think
like,
a lot
is that
of
like a real argument?
Yeah.
What I mean, is it based on?
He had the better game.
Okay.
Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback that ultimately plays the more important position, that played an unbelievable fourth quarter, but who had the better game? That's one of Patrick Mahomes' worst games of his career, really, if you take the whole thing into context. The end was great. Wasp was great. The fourth quarter was great. Did he play like the MVP? I think there's an argument to give to Damian.
What I would give it to Chris Jones, but that's just me.
I actually think Chris Jones had the quote-unquote best game of it. What were the five biggest plays you would say at the Super Bowl? Like, if you were making a Levine's list.
Tyreek catch.
So Mahomes threw him the ball.
Oh, is that what we're going to do?
Williams blocked. I know, but I'm just saying is like all of the big plays in the game came from one person.
The quarterback. That's crazy.
Yeah, he was better than Damian Williams. Damian Williams had a fine game. The only reason people are arguing it is because he had a garbage time. They were going to win the game. He didn't need to score. Damian Williams could have pulled a Todd Gurley and fell. They would have won the football game. They wouldn't have won by double digits, but they still would have won the game and nobody would argue it. Like,
you think that was a garbage time touchdown with a couple of minutes left in the biggest game in the world for the Chiefs to win the first Super Bowl in our lifetime?
That's what you quantify as
a garbage touchdown.
I don't think they needed to score in that situation. All they needed was a first down. So I'm saying is, let's say Damian Williams, he doesn't score. He just gets to the 20 and just lays on the ground.
Still getting the MVP.
I'm saying is Chiefs didn't need the ball, and then they win the football game. They won by 4. They won by 11.
Yeah, but if we're breaking it down, it's not a lifetime achievement award. It's not what position do you play. It's who played better in this game.
I think Patrick Mahomes is better in the Super Bowl than Damian Williams. I don't think the Chiefs win that game. Like, I think the Chiefs win the Super Bowl if you put 50 other running backs in place of Damian Williams. In the history of the NFL, how many players do you think you can swap out with Patrick Mahomes and win that Super Bowl? Like 2-3 maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, down 20-10 with less than 8 minutes to go in the Super Bowl and they won? That would be my argument for Mahomes to win MVP.
Do you think Damian Williams was better in this Super Bowl than Patrick Mahomes, even though he didn't play?
I don't think Mahomes played bad at all.
Well, it wasn't his fault at all. I mean, he didn't play well, but it wasn't his fault.
I don't think he played poorly. I just don't think guys could catch.
That's why I keep talking about
guys
the left
couldn't catch or block.
That's why I keep talking about the left tackle position and how important it is, because it's not like Patrick Mahomes can be Patrick Mahomes without an offensive line. I think that a lot of us, I think I'm probably guilty of this, just assume that I've seen him with this patchwork revolving door of an offensive line with these Riders and Remmers and Alec Grady's and guys I've never heard of, and they just keep winning games. And then all of a sudden, once Eric Fisher went down, man, they really met their match in the Super Bowl. But I'm with you. You can't put any of that on Pat. Like, if you're cutting pieces of the pie, blame pie for the reason the Chiefs lost the Super Bowl, Pat doesn't even get a bite of that thing. It has nothing to do with him.
I'd be willing to listen to the Chris Jones argument of MVP more than I listen to the Damian Williams argument of Super Bowl MVP. We're just going to have a Super Bowl MVP hits today. Julian Edelman.
The hits are coming in hot. Deion Branch, Julian Edelman, Chris Jones. Actual topical story in the Kansas City today is the Kansas City Royals got a win against the Chicago White Sox yesterday, matching their win total against the Sox for the entirety of 2020. Carrington, with that win, do you feel like momentum is beginning to gather and the Royals could go on a little bit of a run?
Absolutely. I think the Royals are showing us that they're different, that they're improved, and I want to see real tangible progress from the Kansas City Royals. Not just I want this player to be better. Like, no, let's hold them to a win total. Let's hold them to a win expectation. And let's give them criteria of things they need to accomplish over the course of the next 5 months. Yesterday was one of those really big things where this team has absolutely dominated you. You needed to show that you weren't going to be pushed around anymore. You needed to be Kevin McAllister and say that you weren't afraid anymore. And for them to win that game and match their entire win total of 2020 against the White Sox, I think it's a nice step forward for Kansas City.
I agree. It's been a great, I was going to call it first week, but it's actually been like 15 days, it feels like. And they've played 7 games. They're 4-3. If you keep going 4-3 and 4-3 and 4-3, eventually you look up and you're way over 500. And we're really, really happy here in Kansas City and at 610 Sports Radio. Do I think they're going to continue that? I do, at least through April. You keep pointing out the schedule and the fact that we haven't seen a good Brad Keller. We haven't seen a good Brady Singer. We haven't seen a Mondesi at all. The reinforcements are coming and the team appears to be pretty good. If I ask you right now, Carrington, May 1st rolls around, are the Royals 500? What's your answer?
I'll go no, but I don't think they're more than 2 games under.
I'll go yes, but they're not more than 2 games over 500. Like, I think they're going to keep it close, at least for the first couple of months. And frankly, isn't that all we were asking for? Isn't that really all we were asking for?
Four.
Well, earlier today on Good Morning Football, Kyle Brandt said there is another threat to the Chiefs and Bills in the AFC.
And this feels great to say. We have to take the Browns seriously. I don't know when the last time that was said, but I really like the Browns this year. And look, they were in the ring with The Undertaker or Ric Flair, whoever you want to call the Chiefs, and they're trading suplexes, and they showed up to that game. And this was a very strange game, and where there was that massively pivotal play about the pylon.
Hollywood Higgins.
In fact, is this it right here? This is the Cleveland Browns season. Maybe it's not, Peter. We never really know. It's kind of highlight roulette. No, it's not. Mahomes was knocked out of this game. The whole thing changed. Chad Henne turns into Randall Cunningham. It was a really strange game. But if you believe in Kevin Stefanski, and for the love of God, how could you not after last year and the improvement? If you believe in Baker, look, I know it's a punchline and it doesn't play well in social media because Browns have a reputation. I don't really care. The future is now. I think the Cleveland Browns are going to be really good next year. They could have gotten rid of Odell, and they're like, no, I think we're going to still keep him. We're really talented. Don't know what they're going to do in the draft, but I like them next year.
Sean, do you believe the Browns have risen to the same tier as the Bills and Chiefs? And if not, is there a team in the AFC that is on that same plane?
No. The Chiefs are on their own plane. Then Buffalo's next. And then whoever you think is that third best team, I would agree. I think it's probably the Cleveland Browns. I think that they're talented. They won a playoff game last year. They kept it close with the Chiefs, albeit in a weird situation where Patrick Mahomes went down. But I think that Baltimore's had their chance the last couple of years and proved to us that they're a nice regular season team. But are they anything better than that? Is Lamar anything more than that? We've seen the Tennessee Titans the last couple of years. We've seen the Indianapolis Colts. I think that outside, Rob, to answer your question of the Chiefs and Buffalo, there's like 5 or 6 teams that are all kind of the same. They're good, but are they a real threat? I don't think so.
I mean, I'd probably put Cleveland in that category more than I would put the Ravens in that category. If I had to give you my power ranking, I think that Kansas City's the best team in the AFC. I think that Buffalo's the second best team in the AFC. I think that Baltimore is the clear third best team in the AFC. And then I would say 4 through 8 are largely interchangeable. I mean, what we've seen in terms of regular season dominance from Lamar Jackson, I think should factor in. I also think it should factor in that they played the Browns 2 times last year in the same division, and they won both of those games. And you remember that the Monday Night Football game was the one that Lamar got out for a couple of snaps and then came back in and then took them down the field and they scored a touchdown. So I still think you have to put the Ravens ahead of the Browns on your power ranking, at least as of now. We'll see what happens in the draft, and maybe Cleveland drafts a player that kind of changed my opinion on it. But I think Cleveland's had a good offseason. I think that Baltimore's offseason probably leaves a little bit to be desired because we thought they were going to get a little bit more of an improvement at wide receiver and only got Sammy Watkins at wide receiver.
What do you think these other teams are thinking about the Chiefs offseason? Like, you can look on paper and say, well, this team's improved. You can look in the draft and say that, oh, Jacksonville's about to add Trevor Lawrence and the Jets are about to add Zach Wilson. Like, these teams are obviously about to get better. Do you think that the Ravens, do you think that the Bills look at the Chiefs and say they've had a good offseason? Or that maybe we've gotten a little bit closer to them? Because the truth is, the Chiefs have gone after a lot of big names, after a lot of frontline Pro Bowl type players, but they haven't really landed a bunch of them.
I think the Chiefs are a little bit more vulnerable than people locally want to give it credit.
I agree with you, bro. Not vulnerable. I don't know how much better they've gotten this offseason versus the last couple of offseasons.
Like, if I'm Baltimore and Buffalo, the thing that I'm really highlighting in the draft is We need to do a better job of getting after the quarterback and getting after Patrick Mahomes, and that's really what their weakness is going to be.
Of course.
So I'm saying is, if we look at the Chiefs right now, and maybe this is me being buzz-killington, but okay.
And they look at him and go, they don't even have a left tackle, and we're trying to get after him. Now's the time.
Not even that, but I would say I'd be a little bit surprised if Kansas City at this point had a top 12 offensive line in the NFL. I think their offensive line is going to be average.
At best.
At best. Average at best. So that means they're probably not a great running team next year. So they're, again, largely one-dimensional. And as of right now, if you're not going to have a really viable third receiving option, I don't know if their weapons are as dynamic if you can just, all right, we know we're going to give up our yards to Hill and Kelce because they're fantastic players. We just can't let Mecole Hardman have 80 yards and that one big play that really flips the field. If you can stop that other guy from having a really good day that really turned things around, you should feel like you should have a chance going into the fourth quarter against the Chiefs. You'll probably lose more times than not because the Chiefs are still one of the five more talented teams in the roster, but I do think the
Super Bowl... Are you basing that off the Super Bowl, though? I don't think that's what you're about to say.
I think everybody should feel that way.
Yeah, I don't. I think I've seen way too much of the Chiefs, way too big of a sample size to say that teams are going to be able to slow them down, that they need a third pass catching option. Like, there's not a lot of teams that you could argue have the best quarterback, the best tight end, and a top three wide receiver to say that they also need another option because I saw Tampa Bay shut them down. The reason Tampa Bay shut them down is because those guys had no chance to get open because the pass rush was awesome. The front four was all up in the grill of Patrick Mahomes all day. And the Chiefs' offensive line was bad. Like, you say you think they're going to be average? I'm not trying to scare anybody here. The offensive line could be bad. And if it's bad, it's a problem. Because if it's bad, Patrick Mahomes isn't Superman. If you don't have Superman, I don't know, man.
I just feel like it was the first time, and I don't think it's fair to Patrick Mahomes, but I think it was that scene in Rocky IV whenever Drago bled for the first time. He's like, he's a man.
That he bleeds.
I'm not going to say just you hype the Chiefs up this way, but a lot of people in Kansas City hype Kansas City up to be this mythical creature.
They did it themselves, C-Dot. They won 14 out of 15 games and 25 out of 27. They got the best quarterback and the best coach, and they won the Super Bowl. I didn't hype them. They did.
And then they played Baylor in the Final Four and got their ass whooped. So now you're thinking, we can beat that team. You might go into it with false confidence and false bravado and think that you're closer to Kansas City than what you are, but if you're Buffalo, if you're Baltimore, if you're Green Bay, you shouldn't feel maybe the fear or that the gap is as big as we thought
it
was.
No, if you're Tampa, you shouldn't be scared of them. If you're Buffalo, you played them twice last year. They beat you twice. If you're Baltimore, what self-confidence do you have that you can beat them? Because the best way to judge a fight or a game is when you actually get into the ring or onto the field. Who wins? Well, I saw them play Buffalo twice last year. This is not some figment of our imagination. They beat them twice. Handily the last time I saw them. Half the game without their left tackle. And Baltimore, once, twice, three times a lady, they beat them every time they face Lamar Jackson. So if you want to say that Tampa should be ultimately confident that if they get back to the Super Bowl, that they can beat the Chiefs, I agree with you. Those other teams have no reason to think they can beat the Chiefs.
I don't watch nearly as much UFC as you do. And Rob, maybe you have an example. Is there a UFC example of someone that got beat as bad as Kansas City got beat in this hypothetical and then went back to being the same dominant person they were before? Because most of the time, at least in boxing, when you have that first loss and it's kind of like this, I'm not saying you don't go back to being a great fighter, but you're never 100% of what you were.
George St. Pierre.
You might be like 92% of what you
were. George St. Pierre lost this cat named Matt Serra. Matt Serra won the Ultimate Fighter. He had no business even fighting for the belt. He was a 20-1 underdog. Serra won the belt. GSP went on to become, in my opinion, the greatest of all time. So maybe I'm just got my red shades on, like I can't take them off, but I think that the Super Bowl was the exception to the rule. And I think that
how many people opposite of George St. Pierre? Like so that's the example of someone that happened. Has it happened to anybody else where they were the Ronda Rousey, baddest person on the planet? We saw them get kicked in the head in front of everybody, and Ronda's never been the same individual.
You don't even believe that's going to happen to the Chiefs. You don't think they're going to go away and completely collapse like Ronda Rousey did.
I'm sure there are examples of somebody who went in like Mike Tyson and then lost to Buster Douglas. Mike Tyson just didn't evaporate after losing to Buster Douglas, but he wasn't Iron Mike anymore. He wasn't impenetrable. You looked at Mike like, you can beat Mike Tyson. There was a game plan. There was a blueprint that people saw to beat Mike Tyson, and the losses started happening more frequently after the loss to Buster Douglas. That's what I'm saying is there's more examples of teams or people that kind of get put on this pedestal. It wasn't like they lost on some buzzer beater here that's like, we'll get him next year. They got embarrassed in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but they got embarrassed because they had a backup center. They had a backup right guard. They had a third string left tackle. Patrick Mahomes was not sharp. Part of that was because of the pass rush. Like, I think that if the Chiefs played that same game 10 times, they probably lose at 6 because of the offensive line they put out there. But if Eric Fisher's on the field, and we're talking about just a left tackle with that same offensive line, then everything changes. To me, the biggest deal why the Chiefs got their asses kicked in the Super Bowl was because Eric Fisher wasn't on that field. That's it. I know it sounds simple. It's because Eric Fisher wasn't there. I know he's just a middle-of-the-road left tackle, but you saw what happens when you put the worst left tackle in football out there against maybe the best front four in the NFL. You don't give the quarterback a chance, therefore the team doesn't have a chance, and you get your ass kicked. I know I just said a lot of stuff and simplified it. Man, if they figure out the left tackle thing, then the dynasty talk continues. And if they don't, then it doesn't. It's that simple.
If you had to bet right now, Chiefs get the one seed in the AFC playoffs, what would you bet?
Yeah, I'd take them versus everybody else.
Because heading into the season, the Chiefs host the AFC Championship game again.
Yes, the same way they did last year and the year before that and the year before that. Yes, they will.
I would probably say no right now.
Who does?
I would pick Buffalo. If you're saying right now who I pick, I would pick Buffalo to be the one seed, Kansas City to be the two seed.
I think Kansas City comes back. Comes back maybe a little bit like Golden State did the year after they won 73 games, where it's more about the playoffs than it is the regular season.
They added Kevin Durant. This team didn't add Kevin Durant.
That's true. They didn't add Kevin Durant. Let's see what they end up adding.
They added Joe Tooney. I mean, which is not a bad player. But I'm saying just the year after the 73, one team added Kevin Durant.
You know Joe Tooney's mom's the real MVP. I bet you didn't know that.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. Keep it locked in right here. We'll also give you a chance to win $1,000 at our national cash contest. Keep it locked in. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
The National Cash Contest code word is object. O-B-J-E-C-T. Object. O-B-J-E-C-T. Text that to 72881. Object is your National Cash Contest code word for 530. Text the word object to 72881. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. Carlos Santana met with the media after the Royals win yesterday and said that this team just keeps fighting.
It's a tough game. You know, we win 2-1 to the eighth inning. He get a home run, but we come back and we win. It's a very important. So we go home and fighting. Play to Anaheim, and I mean, we fight it. We keep it mentally, play hard every day, and try to win the more we can.
So that was Carlos Santana as he met with the media yesterday and talked about this team's spirit and sort of where they are. I'm really curious to see how the Royals handle these next 10 days and if they can ride the wave of momentum coming off their last game. The Royals that you and I have grown up with, they typically have had a stretch like this early on in the season, and it's the one that buries them and eventually ends any level of optimism that one could have about the season and maybe them dreaming bigger. If you look at the schedule and sort of how it's put together, I mean, there's a realistic chance this team could be over 500 at the end of the month. They have a 10-game homestand right now, 3 against the Angels, 4 against the Blue Jays, 3 against the Rays. They have an off day next Thursday. They play 4 against the Tigers, who are a bad team. They play 2 against the Pirates, who might be the worst team in Major League Baseball, and they have 1 game against the Twins as that series then leads into May. So right now they're over 500. It's not crazy to think that they can go through the month of April over 500, which is a really optimistic sign for this team. As of now, Keller hasn't pitched pretty well. Singer hasn't pitched that well. I would say as of now, some of your best offensive players haven't really carried their weight, but you expect them to do so. And one of your more talented players in Adalberto Mondesi haven't really been here. So the fact that this team finds themselves over 500 a week into the season is a pretty big plus for this roster.
Sure. I don't think judging it month by month is really the way you want to do this, though, because then you're going to look up and say, oh, man, they're 10 games under. I think you go series by series.
I don't think they're going to be under 10 games under at any point this season.
I mean, if you, it might take you all the way to the end of the year with the way this team looks. But I do think that if you just go series by series, you're going to have a really good time, because I agree with you. If you start adding it up at the end of April, this team could be over 500. I expect that at this point. I mean, the start that they've gotten off to, as you point out, they're not exactly getting contributions from where they thought. Offensively, it's a good thing that Santana hit a home run yesterday, his first in a Royals uniform, because he's hitting, wait for it, .185. The other big offseason acquisition you added to the lineup, Andrew Benintendi, he was in the middle of that comeback yesterday too. Good thing, because he's hitting .207. Salvi, we figured, you know what you're going to get from him. He's the old incumbent. He's going to hit .280. Well, he's hitting .180 right now. Jorge Soler is hitting .130. I don't want to put too much into it because we're talking about a week worth of baseball. Witt's hitting .393. He's probably not going to hit .393. Michael A. Taylor's hitting .370. That sure as hell not going to happen. Nicky Lopez is still hitting .333. So it's a little bit out of whack right now, both with the lineup and if you look at their rotation. I do think, though, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic because you're going to get reinforcements back, right? You have to assume that Brad Keller at some point is going to look like Brad Keller. You're going to replace Nicky Lopez in the field in the lineup with Adalberto Mondesi. And then just dream with me, Royals fans. Let's say they can continue that in May. And all of a sudden, they've played 2 months. They got their head above water. We're 60 games into this thing. There's 100 left, and they're still winning. Then I think, see that, they start to talk about, let's bring up some of these guys. Let's see what Bobby Witt Jr. is looking like now that the minor league season started. Let's see what a Daniel Lynch or an Ace Lacy could be to actually help this ball club. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself because we're 7 games into this thing. But if at the end of April they're over .500, I'm way on that bandwagon.
I mean, you and I were talking a lot about win total and sort of where I want the team to be. And if you look at the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, I mean, you want to point to a team at least this season that they should be competitive with and a team that sort of reminds them of themselves. I mean, the last 4 seasons for the Angels, if you're not counting last season, the Royals and the Angels actually have the same record last year, 26-34, 72 wins, 80 wins, 80 wins, and 74 wins. That would be a big step up as an organization for this team to get close to that 80 and 82 mark that Los Angeles had in 17 and 18. And that's why I think yesterday's win is so big. If you take away the games against the Chicago White Sox last season, the Royals were a .500 baseball team. If you add those games and they're 8 games under, but against everybody else not named the White Sox, the Royals were an average competitive baseball team. That's why in order to get to that 77 win marker or maybe a little bit better this year, it's just about being competitive against the White Sox. You're going to play the White Sox 17 times this year. Nobody expects you to go 10-7 against them. But can you go 7-10? Can you go 6-11 against them and be competitive against you, and then you make the rest of those games up against the Cleveland? You make the rest of those games up against Detroit? They did a really good job against the rest of the division. They just obviously did such a bad job against the White Sox.
Speaking of the Angels, C-Dot, have you ever had a car? Have you ever bought a new car?
No.
Well, I've got one new car in my life, and then I had it throughout the entire life of the car, and I told myself that if I'm going to take this thing off the lot, I'm going to bury this thing when it dies eventually, and I'm going to kind of live through the ups and downs with it. Albert Pujols kind of feels like that car. Bro, out the gates, Albert Pujols hit .330 as a rookie. He hit .330 and had 37 home runs and 100 RBI. And then the next year he hit .314, had 118 RBI. Then all he did was hit .360 with 140 RBI, .330, .330, .331, .327, .357, .327, .312, .299. Started to taper off a little bit, and then he becomes a free agent. And the Cardinals say, look, we don't want to pay you for what you've already done the last 10 years. We want to pay you for what you think we're going to do. So we'll give you 5 years and $150 million. It seems very reasonable. We'll give you about $30 million a year for 5. And Poole said, the number's right. That's what I want, $30 million a year. But I want 10 years. And for some crazy-ass reason, the Angels went, okay, we'll do it. And they gave him that type of money. So they're cutting Albert Pujols a $30 million check this year. I know. Baseball, no salary cap, all these different things. You can spend a bunch of money. Well, the truth is, if you're giving Albert Pujols $30 million, and this year he's hitting .150, last year he hit .224, the year before that .244, .245, .241, Albert Pujols has turned into a significantly below average Major League Baseball player for the last 5 or 6 years, and he's making $30 million a season. In hindsight, that might be the worst contract that any team's ever gave a player, period.
Coming up in just a little bit, we will go inside the mind of the machine. I was listening to an NBA podcast last week, and someone made a really good point about Kevin Durant. That Kevin Durant is the only popular basketball player who doesn't have a hive. Like, LeBron James certainly has a hardcore, dedicated fan base. Kobe Bryant is somebody. Steph Curry. There are people that identify themselves as big Steph Curry fans. I was thinking that as we've been talking today over the course about Mike Trout. Because you and I grew up in the era where we know somebody who was a huge Ken Griffey Jr. fan.
Everybody.
Our boss, Steven Spector, grew up in Washington, D.C. His favorite baseball player is Chipper Jones. Loves Chipper Jones. Grew up watching TBS. Braves fan. That is his favorite player. Do you know anybody that feels that way about Mike Trout? Like, I feel like everybody says the exact same thing about Mike Trout because that's what we feel as sports fans. We got to say, well, he's great. He's one of the greatest baseball players I've ever seen. He's the next Mickey Mantle. Does anybody really feel that way? Because baseball players used to make us feel something. We had a connection to them. You had a connection to Pedro Martinez. You had a connection to Big Poppy. You had a connection to Manny Ramirez. Those were guys that you would consider yourself to be fans of, guys that you like, guys that you cheer, guys that you boo, guys that you like cheering for or against. I don't think anybody feels that way about Mike Trout. I just think we say nice platitudes because that's what we know we're supposed to say about Mike Trout, when the case is Mike Trout is just boring.
Well, no, we say it because he's earned it. I mean, he is probably the most talented and actually lived up to the hype baseball player maybe that there's ever been. He is Mickey Mantle. Like, if you want to talk about a guy that can run the bases, has the arm, can flag down like a Gold Glover, hits for power. I mean, that guy does everything on the baseball field. His team just don't win. There's not that moment or that game that you can point to, but there's a reason why he's won four MVPs and come in runner-up a couple of other times. Like, say what you will about Mike Trout. He's boring. He's got the 10th highest selling jersey in baseball. I agree with those things. He's the best player in baseball. It's not even close.
Yeah, I don't think anyone, but I'm saying is,
he might be the best player. Like, all those guys you just named, Ken Griffey Jr. and Albert Pujols, all these guys, he's better than all those guys, man.
And I'm saying is, I don't care about that. I don't think most people care about that. I think everybody identifies that. Yeah, you're good. Like, everybody, you're fantastic. You're a great baseball player. But do you care about Mike Trout? Do you feel any connection to Mike Trout? Do you know Mike Trout? And the answer is really no. And that's just really odd because you and I grew up at a time where, say what you want about Derek Jeter, everybody that liked baseball cared about Derek Jeter one way or the other.
But either, he plays in New York City and he's winning World Series. Like, it's a completely different stage than Mike Trout's been on.
I mean, Ken Griffey played in Seattle. People like Ken Griffey Jr.
His dad was Ken Griffey Sr. Like, they're these guys.
Barry Bonds, Manny Ramirez. But I can name, we can name 20 baseball players that have
Manny Ramirez had the cool hair, and Barry Bonds' dad's name was Bobby Bonds. He played too. I mean, yeah, we can keep playing this game. Like, I think that Mike Trout's problem is, one, he's a normal, average-looking white dude.
I don't know if he's ever been Mike Trout in terms of, like, popular, or not Mike Trout, Bryce Harper. I don't think he's ever had that level of buzz. You hate Bryce Harper. I'm saying is, you have more of a negative reaction toward Bryce Harper than you have a positive reaction towards Mike Trout. And I'm saying is, that's the way that I think Harper's made himself interesting. He's got the buzz cut, he's got the hair, he's got the attitude, he's got the clown question, bro. People either strongly like him or dislike
him. He's a 267 career hitter. Mike Trout's a 305 career hitter.
I don't think anyone's debating that Mike Trout's good at baseball. Everybody identifies it. I'm talking about, do you like him? Like Patrick Mahomes, you like Mahomes. You would go buy tennis shoes because Patrick Mahomes does.
I don't think Mike Trout cares, though. I think that almost all these athletes care. I think Mike Trout cares about being the best baseball player, the best husband, best friend. Yeah, it's incredibly boring.
That's boring.
It's very boring. It doesn't mean that he's any less of a baseball player.
I'm talking about him as a superstar and him as a person.
I'm looking at the highest selling jerseys right now in baseball.
He's an amazing baseball player that nobody cares about.
Do you know who Enrique Hernandez plays for?
I don't know who that is.
The Red Sox. He's got a higher selling jersey right now than Mike Trout. You know Javi Baez, I'd assume,
the
Cubs. Yeah, he's got a higher selling jersey right now. Yadi Molina.
He's not even Kyle Schwarber as a player. Like, Kyle Schwarber has more of a fan base than Trout does.
I don't know about that. Kyle Schwarber's just some random-ass baseball player. I think Mike Trout people appreciate. They just don't necessarily stop what they're doing to watch because he isn't that exciting. For as good as he is, he's really not that exciting.
Would you say he's fun to watch?
You got to be a real baseball geek. But if you're a real baseball geek, then you'd probably rather watch Mike Trout than any other player. Like, all these guys that you just named, there are a lot of flash, a lot of flair, not a lot of substance.
He's not even the most interesting person on his own team to me. I'd much rather go see Ohtani play if I had to pick. He's not even the most interesting person on that coast. Like, you're telling me right now I could go watch Fernando Tatis play baseball or watch him. I'd rather go watch Tatis play. It's more fun to me. It's more entertaining. It's more enjoyable.
It's also not just a Mike Trout problem. It's also a baseball problem. Like, Mike Trout's essentially what Patrick Mahomes is on the football field or what LeBron James is on the basketball court. He's the best. He's generational. He can do everything. Baseball needs to do a better job of marketing that player. There's no reason why Mike Trout is going to end up with one of the most impressive careers of all time, and he can walk down the road in pretty much every city in the country and not even get stopped because people don't recognize that that guy is the best baseball player of all time that's got $450 million in the bank. I don't think he cares, though. I think a lot of these other guys care. They care about their image. They care about their likeness. They care about the pats on the back. How many commercials have you ever seen Mike Trout in? How many interviews? How many press conferences? Like, I don't think he gives a damn.
I mean, he's certainly allowed to be who he wants to be. But just as someone that talks about sports, and again, I feel like we say all these nice things about Mike Trout because we're supposed to say all these Mike Treens. I don't think any of us feel that way about Mike Trout, which is fine to say, but like, he's Tim Duncan. That's what he is. He's Tim Duncan. That's cool. But you don't hear me, but God, you know who I really love watching? Man, that 25-10 that Tim Duncan had with those layups and didn't really dunk the basket, that was so much. Believe me, you and I were around during that Spurs run. You guys did not enjoy watching San Antonio Spurs basketball. Don't kid yourself.
Timmy!
Rob, let's go inside the mind of the machine. Y'all was out here fake liking the Spurs, huh? This is so exciting. It's a great brand of basketball.
Now in our vending machine, you can get runts. What's your favorite color of runt?
I don't like runts at all.
What? We were looking for yellow or pink.
Yellow's not the best flavor of anything.
Only runts. Like, yellow candy's nasty in general.
Of nothing.
No, the yellow bananas are great.
Lemonheads aren't that bad.
Yeah, lemonheads are fine.
They're not that bad. That's the only good yellow candy that there is.
We've been talking a lot of wide receivers in the Hall of Fame. Will Tyreek Hill end up in Canton? Say yes.
Maybe. I'm going to go maybe.
Very strong opinion.
I mean, the real answer is I don't know. I mean, I think you have to ask me at the end of this season, because I'm not sure he's going to be on the team in 2 years. I'm not sure, which I think that has a major effect on what my answer would be.
The Denver Broncos have the 9th pick in the upcoming NFL draft. Do they spend it on a quarterback? And if so, whose name do they call?
I'm going to go yes, and I'm going to say Justin Fields. I think the Broncos draft Justin Fields. I actually don't think they trade. I don't think they're at 9. I think they trade up to get him.
Isn't it weird, the Justin Fields? It feels like the entire regular season and the first couple of weeks of the offseason was the hands-down second-best quarterback, second-best player in this draft, and now he could go as low as 9? Like, what the hell happened? And on the flip side of that, Mac Jones, like, do we really believe in that with San Francisco? It's going to work? I feel like these teams just fall in love with their guy and draft him, but I don't know, man. What are the Royals going to do when Mondesi comes back with Nicky Lopez?
This is probably not going to be a good answer for your day. But I mean, I don't think anyone can say right now, because you don't know when Adalberto Mondesi's coming back. Like, how is he hitting? Like, if I had to guess,
he's not hitting 333. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, but if he's hitting 290 here by next Thursday, I don't think they're sending him back. Like, I don't think that Adalberto Mondesi comes back before the Minnesota series. So next Friday they go on the road. I think that's the first realistic date of when we can think that Adalberto Mondesi can come back. What's Nicky Lopez? I mean, they have a 10-game homestand over this. Is Nicky Lopez still hitting the cover off the ball and he's hitting 330 at the end of that? Then they're not sending him down. Does he regress to the mean? It's like, all right, it's over. Hey, we got a good 25 games out of him, but it's time to move on. Like, I just don't think you can answer that question today.
Can you imagine, you're Nicky Lopez, you're hitting 300. You were supposed to be down the minors. You've really been a big part of this team so far through the first 7 games. Got the third best lineup of all the everyday players, and they're like, nah, we're good. We're sending you back down to the minors. That just feels like it would be a real mental hit. I'd rather keep him up, send one of those bullpen pitchers down, and just have an extra infielder that can pretty much play anywhere. At least while he's cooking. Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. We all agree with that. Most people think the Bills are the second best team. C-Dot, you and I differ on the third.
I can't believe you got so high on the Cleveland Browns.
I think the Cleveland wins the division.
I'm trying to figure out what happened with Cleveland.
I think the Browns win the division. I don't know what you like so much about Baltimore. Baltimore can't beat Kansas City. Do you agree with that?
They can beat Cleveland. We saw it beat them.
Cleveland can't beat Kansas City either. Moot point. Who's been the bigger surprise so far for the Royals? Nicky Lopez or Michael A. Taylor, who's hitting 380?
I think it's Michael A. Taylor. I think Michael A. Taylor has probably been their best player so far. If we're talking offensively and defensively, I think he's been fantastic.
Wait, might win the MVP if he's playing like this.
I think that he's certainly the defensive player that I thought whenever the other shoe drops, what does it regress to? Does it regress to him being his best year, which is like a 270 type player, or does he just absolutely regress to what he was? But I mean, I think you see what Dayton's vision was and what he saw. So I would say out of those two, I'd pick Michael A. Taylor.
I was drinking an A&W classic root beer, and Sam out in the control room told me that he's never tried root beer.
Because it's disgusting. He's living a better life for it.
Well, first of all, he's lying. Everybody's tried root beer. Sam's a 28-year-old man. He's definitely tried root beer at some point. That's ridiculous. And second of all, or third of all, what are you talking about? Root beer's nasty.
I absolutely hate root beer. I don't think I've had root beer probably since high school. Like, I don't like it at all.
Have you ever had the Culver's root beer?
No. I don't have any interest in having
it. Oh, it's great. The perfect amount of fizz. It's phenomenal. Dad's root beer? I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, believe me, I'm leaving all of it for you. You can have all of the root beer that
Thank
you would
you.
Like.
Thank you. Who you got in the Jake Paul-Ben Askren fight that's coming up on Saturday?
The viewer, I think,
okay.
Wins.
All right. Earlier today.
I don't know anything about Ben Askren other than he went to Missouri. Like, I'm sure he's a swell individual. I can't name anybody that he's fought.
No, you do. He's the guy that got kneed in the face by George Masvidal. The 5-second fight?
Yeah, I still don't really know that, but you told me. So like, oh, yeah, okay, I know what you mean. I don't know what you mean, though.
I don't know anything about Jake Paul, and I'm not even trying to be cool. Like, what's this dude's deal?
He's a very, very popular YouTuber, probably one of the 5 most popular YouTube people alive.
Because of a keyboard? Like, what? Why?
He just makes content that people like on the internet. There's really no other way to explain it.
He's the old influencer, huh?
I mean, he might be the biggest YouTube influencer.
The biggest YouTube influencer.
I think you'd be surprised at how much money these people make from
oh,
YouTube.
Oh, no. They got boatloads of money. Him and his
I ain't never going to make fun of them people.
I just don't understand. They're not likable. They're not that good looking. They don't really do anything incredibly well. They're not funny. What is it? Just a bunch of like teeny boppers clicking and following
yeah,
them?
Yeah, I think this is kind of one of those things that like.
I really don't. I sound old now. I don't get it.
I think the same way that you and I kind of. I think celebrity is changing.
Yeah.
And I think if you ask people under 21, they probably feel like these people are celebrities. Like, YouTube people, Instagram people, TikTok people, like there's just more avenues for you to be famous and gain a following than ever before.
Oh, it's so much easier to be famous than it was back in my day. Like with the internet, bro, all you have to do is have a cell phone, make a video. You know why Kim Kardashian's famous, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's, I don't think it's as easy as you think it is to be famous. I think it is certainly easier than it was before. I also think, though, that the internet moves so quickly where people get over you faster. Like, you can be Lil Nas X, be the hottest thing smoking, and then the next Lil Nas X comes up. So, I'll never make fun of Kim Kardashian because she has literally been famous for being famous for 15 years.
It's
like,
impressive.
A lot of people have come and gone who have tried to do the exact same thing. Kim is one of the 10 most famous people in the world. We don't know what she does every day for a living and has done that for 15 years.
I've seen it, and she does it well. You don't really think Julian Edelman's a chance to get in the Hall of Fame, do you?
Like a 15, 20% chance.
So that's a no. Either do I. That's all I got.
Catch you guys tomorrow. Take care of yourself. It's The Drive.